in Throibo at Altari Dei. The boy's blank face asked the blank window, but yours didn't. You dreamt of Ulysses sailing the pages of Charles Lamb, wonderful tales in the cave of a full stop and seas of paragraphs, adventures, episodes. What colour was the binding? What did the pages smell like? Blue. They smelt blue. Walking home, wandering home, another home, another wandering. Your mind a chalice of words, of voices for the places you passed, the places you wrote upon that wrote you. The Count of Monte Cristo lurking in a doorway, an Elizabethan air in a squeaking gate. Later, Dante conversed with Shakespeare on the North Strand and Ibsen looked up from a forge. To you, passing through, your feet mechanically following on, your mind soaring. You flew where to? The call of the water. Night mail to exile. What was in your mind as you sailed westward ho, eastward ho, over the seas of Europe? She slept in your arms and the waves lapped and the dim light on the wall of the cabin crawled across your memory. A tower on the coast overlooking Scotsman's Bay with the bathing place, men only, beneath. Do you see? A well-set man with a flower in his buttonhole. Sir, sir, and your essay, Perseverance. Listen. Persevere. Listening through a partition and gazing down the skylight of a tenement to a cheap boarding house in London with a one-eyed landlady, Cyclopia. Turn again, Cyclopia, turn again. Birdman, you glided over dear, dirty Dublin city of the drab-drinking dead, the seventh city in Christendom where Swift went mad, paralysed by its own language. Get the hell out of it. Turn again, Birdman. The streets are paved with ghosts where the boy's blank face asks the blank window, numbingly reflected back along the coast, the capes of no hope. This way, drowning, the end. When you awoke, it was Trieste. Three gulls wheeled in the sky above the station, over the noise of the harbour and the creaking quays where the ferryboat's horns on waves crashed into the pier. Austrian, Italian, Hungarian, Austrian, Italian tongues rose up over the boys who chased the lame dog up and down the platform. You came blinking into the light out of the train station, sunny sound everywhere. You left Nora in a park opposite, penniless, and struck off into town to find a room for the night. Instead, you found a fight to intervene in and found yourself arrested. You, a British subject from the Royal University of Ireland, in a cell with three drunken sailors. What were you thinking of? What you'd found? Two fights later and one fight before between two British soldiers in a red light district. But that would come later. You were knocked to the ground. English language lessons for Berlitz. Describe the search for a room in a city by an unmarried couple not familiar with. Describe a room where all the furniture is rented and... Describe a place where a man and a woman are deeply unhappy and yet have to pretend that things in their lives are... Poverty, a pregnant wife you claimed, and short stories in these surroundings that were difficult to write. Short stories written in the spirit of revenge for those who betrayed you in Dublin. Trieste. What betrayals. Roman banks paid double the money for less working hours, for more written hours, and with that miscalculation, you fled. Rome, open city, open graves, another cemetery. Too much like Dublin for you, too much. Papal Rome was Trieste's harbour and Dublin's coombe. A strange analogy, harbour and then hovel, pier and circus, there in the eternal tenement. You hated it, but it entered your dreams and poisoned your sleep. What sleep? Traipsing around the eternal tenement, son, mother, father, a holy family living in sin in rented rooms as small as a spider's web. And one tiny bed, where you and Nora slept at opposite ends. Later, the blooms would sleep in these positions. Softer foot to hanging overhead, hanging here. Just a song at twilight. Rome did soften your attitude to Dublin. You were too harsh, you said. You hadn't depicted any of its hospitality or beauty. What about an Odysseus in Dublin? Love's old sweet song with a Greek tongue and Roman accent. Ulysses, or as you pronounced it, Ulysses. Oil of Ulysses, your first wanderer was to be Alfred J. Hunter. Alfred J. who? The memory of a bloodied nose, a blackened eye in St. Stephen's Green. And a passerby, Mr. Alfred J. Hunter, orthodox Samaritan type, unorthodox Dubliner, Jew and cuckold, picked you up off Stephen's, that is, your green, and brought you home. What you and Alfred J. spoke of, if you spoke at all, is not known. Lights out, and Ulysses languished no farther than the title. Remembering Dublin instead in the dead. You flew Rome, you fled. Where to? Trieste, yes. Trieste. There were no gulls in the sky above the station, and only the sound of the harbour came from the creaking quays, creaking in the rain. Still, the sea was full. Austrian, Italian, Hungarian, Austrian, Italian tongues bustled by, filling and emptying the platforms. You came wide-eyed into the gloom and out of the station. You met your brother, a glowering Stanislaus, and left with him. Nora, heavily pregnant, and your son, virtually penniless. Once again, you struck off into town to find a room at the inn for the night. The room you found later was at 45 Via Nuova. Vita Nuova? No, not really. Rather, Purgatorio. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. After an initial flourish, you were laid flat by rheumatic fever, and your daughter was born in the pauper's ward. Ulysses came to visit you in the dark. "Expand me into a short book," he said. "Look at Peer Gynt again. And what about Paddy Faust in a brothel? You have to laugh at the worst of times." You met Ettore Schmitz. He spoke Italian, but held Austrian citizenship. He had an Austro-German-Hungarian lineage and was Jewish by religion. He too was a writer, had a moustache, and was a family man with a wife and one daughter. You quizzed him relentlessly about Jewish life and lore. Bloom loomed, one June to come, and a fine day. What a sight you were for home eyes, thin and grim. Citizen Jim, home to found Ireland's first cinema. Tuesday, December 21st, 1910. All those interested in the new art of the cinematograph should make a point of not missing the really marvellous series of pictures opened before a large number of invited visitors at the Volta Picture Theatre at 45 Mary Street. This theatre, which is the result of Mr. James Joyce's tireless work and whom should be congratulated, indeed esteemed, is laid out in the Italian style. The chief pictures shown were the first Paris orphanage, La Pouponnière, and the tragic story of Beatrice Cenci. An excellent little string orchestra played splendidly. All in all, this new venture is an outstanding entertainment in which no expense has been spared and one deserving the patronage of the public. Wrong music, right sentiment. The end. 45 Mary Street, Dublin. A small woman and a boy big for his age in short pants pass by. Ramshackle volta, shabby and shut. It didn't last. That cinema is gone, but the film ran on into your writing as fluid as it. The leg of the duck, the leg of the duck. Oh, Alfred J., later Leopold B., wandering would-be entrepreneurs. Another crushing disappointment awaited you with your would-be, won't-be publisher, Grant Richards. Your short stories, Dubliners, withdrawn and pulped. You always maintained they were burnt. Disheartening, that. You sang... Burning manuscripts, the taste of ash in the air, a lone trail of smoke just over the sea there, winding slowly, mournfully, skyward. Birds, words, crackles, and the voice in the flames.
Se pater cosmon, pater aionon, melpomen hom, pasaite zeu, λόγοι μοι δούλαοι, όσα κόσμο έχει προς επουρανιον Αγίος ελάων.
Introibo ad altari Dei. Now the book that had been in the back of your mind since Rome, open city, began to assert itself. Ulysses in Dublin, City of Words, Stephen Dedalus, Leopold Bloom, Molly Bloom, scroungers, barflies, passers-by walk through a classical epic. Here profanity sits with eloquence and the most daring of literary sophistication. Here erudition buys ignorance a pint and watches meticulous scholarship move through a morning's shifting bowels. The modern landscape of the industrial urban phenomenon stretches out before us, is us. Flat 5, Via Donato Bramante at dawn. Standing on your writing table with stately plump Buck Mulligan shaving the morning air. There, in Trieste, overlooking a northerly Dublin bay at 8 a.m. June 16th, 1904. The day you and Nora first walked out together. It was Gold Cup Day at Ascot, while in New York, the General Slocum blew up in the East River and 500 lives were lost. And Dublin? Well, Cleary's summer sale was on, the pubs were open, there were births and deaths, there was much to be done, there was nothing to be done, there were rules to be broken and order to be kept. Soldiers in the city, drink, the prostitutes were busy, business as usual. And Trieste? Uneasy, given the gathering war clouds, people began leaving the city, but you stayed in the Martello Tower with a sullen Stephen Dedalus, away from the war, wiping his brow. Europe burned around you. Until June 27th, 1915, when you boarded a train for Zurich. Mr. Leopold Bloom ate with relish the inner organs of beasts and fowls. Three views of a secret. Zivilstrasse 54, Zurich, remembering Giacono Viniziani Ship Varnish Company in Servola, just outside Trieste, constructing 7 Eccles Street, Dublin. Mr. Leopold Paula Bloom, height 5 feet 9 and a half inches, weight 11 stone and 4 pounds, had a Dublin torso, that of your friend John Francis Byrne. Kind and cuckolded as Alfred J. Hunter, he had Ettore Schmitz's moustache and a Jewish lineage that stretched back to Hungary. As an archetype, he is the Greek Odysseus and Roman Ulysses. Something of a pagan then in the seventh city of Christendom. And feeling a bit peckish as he walked around your damp flat, buying kidneys, musing on that other man's strong, brash handwriting, Boylan. Mrs. Marion. Mrs. Marion. Till he defecated in the outside toilet inside your manuscript.
Oh,
The socialist ideas that whirled around you in Trieste now came to rest in the restless, questing Bloom walking the Dublin streets. Dublin torso, Swiss mouth, eyes of Trieste. Yes, Dublin remodelled in Trieste was Trieste as Dublin in Zurich. Dublin, Tublin, Zublin, invisible cities, odyssey of furnished flats, while your bags moved you constantly about, your mind centred on Ulysses. Was it Bloom or you who flirted with Gertrude Kempfer in Locarno? Gertrude was very wary. Who asked her to write to you using the secret address of the Poste Restante in Zurich? Henry Flower? You were Bloom here. What brought you ashore to this Nausicaa? You who didn't hide in the waves, did you wish that you had?
Those girls, those lovely seaside girls, all dimples, smiles and curls, each head it simply whirls. They look a sight, complexions green and white. Their hats fly off and at your feet falls golden hair from Regent Street. Rouge and puffs slip down the cuffs of pretty little seaside girls. Those girls, those lovely seaside girls, all dimples, smiles and curls, your head it simply whirls. They look all right, complexions pink and white. They've diamond rings and dainty feet, golden hair from Regent Street, lace and grace and lots of face, those pretty little seaside girls.
Zurich, 1,342 feet above sea level. A huge photograph of a man from Trieste. Was it Ettore Schmitz? Hung on your wall, your writing desk beneath. You only ever told friends he was the model for Bloom. Friends like Frank Budgeon, self-educated painter and former man of the sea, sensitive, intelligent and a perfect foil for your obsessions. It was to Budgeon that you revealed that your novel was based on Homer's Odyssey in the time span of 18 hours on one fine day in Dublin, and that it was also an epic of the human body and that an organ would dominate each episode. December 1918, 29 Universitätsstrasse, opposite another Nausicaa. A seabird stalking the outgoing tide, flush. She was in the toilet when you spied her. You coveted her. What perfumes, what names, and what lovely names to name. Kinky. 2 days later, you encountered her in the street. She was Stephen's bird girl with a slight limp, Martha Fleischmann. She will give Gertie MacDowell her limp and sexual impetuosity. Was it you or Bloom who seduced her? She limped back onto the strand.
The zone that doth become thee fair,
thus nude upon thy yellow hair. Bid adieu, adieu. Sign of maidenhood. Bid adieu, 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 adieu.
Hugh and Budgeon strolled through Zurich's old town and the other sights, your mind on Ormond Quay, city of Dublin, river of words. Charlemagne, emperor, Gross Munster, commemorated here. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, poet, Spiegelgasse 11, there. And Richard Wagner, composer, Villa Wesendonck, celebrated here. Bronze by gold heard the hoof iron steely ringing, impertinentitin. You claimed Die Meistersinger was wrecked by your sirens. Can we believe it? You said this whole episode was a giant fugue that drew on all the technical resources of music. Piano, forte, rallentando. Is it not rather a refutation of the idea of all the arts aspiring to the condition of music? Who knows, the ear is the organ in the ascendant here, according to your grand design. Bloom is tortured, thrown off course, tempted by his post-restant amour, Marta Clifford, until Blazes Boylan, at that very moment, consummating his affair with Molly, becomes, to me, Siopold, consumed. Thank you.
For was nearer to live and die, but alas, 'twas idle dreaming, and the dream too soon hath flown. Not one ray of hope is gleaming, I am lost, yes, I am lost, for she.
Aristophane!
Lovely seaside girls, all dimples, smiles, and curls. Each head it simply whirls. They look.
There was one bird, a hawk, swooping over the station. The harbour was completely deserted. And though the summer evening had begun to fold the world in its mysterious embrace, things had changed unalterably. There was one hawk-like bird swooping over the harbour, and there was no one to talk to about Bloom, that mysterious stranger. There were no gulls in the sky, and his eyes were full of sadness and the dark colours he wore. A prince. You were back in Trieste, but the sea was empty, save for Gertie MacDowell flashing on the strand at the deserted harbour. And the prince. Revising your 12th episode, Cyclops, and writing your 13th, Nausicaa, you wrote to your Aunt Josephine in Dublin for hymnals, cheap novelettes, anything. It was a sunset evening in Trieste when you walked from the old green train that had such a lovely rusty look to the station's dusky facade. Old and welcoming. Ruffians were screaming as they ran along the platforms, brats, but they didn't disturb the deep inner quiet, the presence, the great stillness, the overwhelming calmness, the deep inner quiet, the deep inner quiet of... How could you write here, living in a flat with 11 other people? Your Trieste was dying on you and exile beckoned again. You threw yourself into the eating of the oxen of the sun until there were oxen everywhere, trampling the Via della Sanità, defecating and urinating in the Piazza Caserma, looming up at you on a plate of fish, mewing and lowing at the top of a glass. It was 1,000 hours before you finished The Oxen of the Sun. It was the last episode that you'd ever write in Trieste. Trieste is waking Paris and waking Raleigh at number 9 Rue de l'Université, which pleased you greatly because it reminded you of Dublin. Which Dublin? Dublin of 1904 or the last Dublin you saw in 1910? You were only supposed to be passing through Paris. A week or so was what was planned. You stayed 20 years. Paris spread out all about you, but your mind belonged to the witch, Circe. Hotel d'Elysee, August 15th, 1920. You met Wyndham Lewis and T.S. Eliot, the Bishop of Hippo, you called him. His Excellency had a parcel for you from Ezra Pound. Its large brown leaves of paper were sliced open to reveal a pair of trousers and two brown second-hand shoes. Oh, you said. Oh, they replied. Then you went out to dinner and came home drunk. Did you try the shoes on? Did you take a few steps? Or did these two belong to Bella Combe, the lady of the night, dominatrix, Bloom will lick her boots. Later, when the whole flat slept, the shoes became boots, became trots, became gallops, became hooves, and trampled your dreams. Wait, my love, and I'll be with you. Ancient Greek witch, modern Dublin harlot, look into your soul, look into your genitals. Your face is fair, but your song is coarse. Five, Boulevard Raspail, 21st address for Ulysses. The nightmare of the Circe episode washed you to this Ithaca, home. What way did the land lie? Quite well. It was a luxury flat in the 6th arrondissement. And how did the writing go? Slow at first, with so much detail. It was, you said, the last and stormiest cape. How did you get there? Up Sackville Street. Did you make any stops? Yes. Where? At the Café Bizantino Trieste. And what did you order? Fendant du Sillon. Electricity. And what did you do then? Left in the early hours and walked home. Where? Down the Boulevard Raspail, right and up Universitätsstrasse, Via della Sanita to 7 Eccles Street. Had you forgotten your key? Yes. Stravinsky's Les Noces, where you met Marcel Proust. You were introduced, but what did you speak about? Accounts vary. One has you both comparing duchesses and chambermaids. Another has you both discussing women's knickers. While yet another has you both being polite and regretting that neither of you knew the other's work. Very nice. But you lied. You scribbled in a notebook. Proust, analytic still life. Reader ends sentence before him. Which sentence? And what reader? 20,000 hours of writing later, and your sentences still ran on. Seemingly one sentence, what seems to be one breath.
Oh. voglio tornare, sì, non si io voglio tornare.
Seagirt, Ithaca, landlocked Paris, Blackpool, Dublin, invisible. Yes, the odyssey of eight sentences spin on the word yes. We, ya, see, yes. Signatures of all things that read. Read this. Reading. And read. And read. Later read as, and one day will read. Ulysses.
That you love.